Hey, I'm Abigail Johnson, and you're listening to the Tennis in the UK podcast. To some, it has felt like months, to others like days, but we are now into the final week of ITF World Tennis Tour events being staged at Nottingham Tennis Centre. I specify ITF tennis because next month we will be back in Nottingham, surprise, surprise, for the WTA and ATP Challenger Grass Court Season tournaments. They are branded the Rothesay Open Nottingham and contested simultaneously. But this week sees the current three-week block of M25 and W25 level events come to a conclusion. And to briefly recap for those joining us for the first time, hello there. These are the second step up on the professional tennis ladder. And this week there will be many eyes on Arina Rodionova, given that the Aussie has played 10 matches and won 10 matches across the fortnight of competition so far. She had to work a little harder than usual in Sunday's final, and we give credit to 20-year-old Brit Marnie Banks, a player you will hear much more from in future. She came back from a set and a breakdown in typical fighting fashion to force a decider, but 33-year-old Rodionova summoned her experience and consistency to get it done 6-4, 4-6, 6-2, and grab her second singles trophy in as many weeks. And it was also deja vu on the women's side in the doubles, not because the same players were victorious, but because it was the second straight week of an all-British pairing taking the title. A 6-4, 6-3 win for longtime friends Emily Appleton and Lauren Jean-Baptiste over top seeds Rutuja Bosala and Ariane Hartono, who both reached finals during week one, secured the first professional trophy as a team for that pair. But as far as ITF titles go, it was number 5 in doubles for Jean-Baptiste and number 14 for Appleton. Both Lauren and Emily, by the way, featured on series 1 of the podcast at the end of last year, so if you haven't listened to those appearances, get across that after you've heard from our latest podcast guest in a few minutes' time. Before that, in the men's singles, it was number 7 seed August Holmgren who lifted his first singles trophy at this level, losing just one set across the 5 matches he contested. The 25-year-old from Denmark had his closest match in terms of number of games dropped in the final, but still managed to put 27-year-old Frenchman Lucas Poulin away in 2 tiebreaks. And it was a strong week across the board for Holmgren, who also made the doubles final alongside the USA's Alfredo Perez. They were the number 4 seeds and lost out in the final to the team seeded 1 spot higher. That was GB's Dan Little and Mark Whitehouse, who saved 3 championship points on the way to a 6-4, 3-6, 12-10 final triumph, 2 days ahead of Mark's 30th birthday. Happy birthday, Mark. I think everyone's doing their absolute best to make him feel ancient, but I'm not convinced it's working, particularly after he beat 32-year-old week one finalist Dan Cox in the first round this week. While Mark Whitehouse was gearing up for that particular match, his doubles partner was giving half an hour to the Tennis in the UK podcast, because today you will be hearing from 25-year-old Dan Little, who has made the singles semi-finals in both weeks of competition in Nottingham so far, and is closing back in on the career-high ranking of world number 632 that he achieved shortly after winning the M25 Sheffield title as a qualifier in January. He is also one of very few people on the planet who have seen more of Nottingham Tennis Centre than I have over the past year. And over the course of the next 30 minutes, you will find out why that is. You'll also hear about how unusually late Dan was in deciding to pursue a professional tennis career, whether he feels players can truly open up to each other on the tour, what he feels have been the biggest changes in his game to enable his recent progression, and much more. It is time to hear from Dan Little. As we're in Nottingham, it makes a little bit of sense that we're talking to Dan Little, who is very familiar with the place of Nottingham. So, Dan, welcome to the podcast. We're in Nottingham. It's week 3, but week 2 was a very good week for you. Semi-finals and singles, final, and the win in doubles with Mark Whitehouse. So do you want to talk a little bit about your week last week and before as well, making semi-finals and the singles in week 1?
Yeah, like you said, it's just been great to have a couple of tournaments on my home courts, and it's been successful for me the past couple of weeks. Two semi-finals in singles and winning the doubles. Just having the home comforts being just so natural in these on these courts. Like one of the days of the first week, we kind of moved indoors, and I obviously knew it a lot better than the other players, particularly, and that really helped me. I've just found it really nice to be here the last couple of weeks, and obviously everything off court is a lot easier when you're at home, and so obviously that helps on court and just makes you feel a lot better on court. And like, I'm just feeling really comfortable out there and getting a lot of matches in, and they've kind of gone my way, which has been great.
Let's jump right into it then. So this home court advantage, that's not a myth. That's that you genuinely feel that when you're here.
Yeah, I would say so. Like, I do think it makes a difference. Like, I, to be honest, actually at Nottingham they have been resurfaced, the outdoor courts, so I can't say I've hit that much on these like resurfaced courts before I came here, but it was certainly a difference when we had one of the days where we went indoors and everyone else wouldn't have been playing indoors, but I knew the indoor courts super well, and so I was like straight, it wasn't much of a change for me. Like, I knew what to expect. But yeah, I would almost say actually it's just the courts themselves are great, but it's just the surroundings and the conditions in Nottingham can certainly be difficult. It often gets very windy here and it can really like be difficult to handle, and I'm kind of used to that. Like whenever I'm training outdoors, it's not just for the period of the tournaments, obviously all year round it can be pretty tough outside here because it's such an open facility, and so I think that helped me, particularly in the first week when it was very windy. I think like I was just able to deal with it maybe a little bit better, but so that's been a huge advantage as well, just knowing the weather here, to be honest.
No, 100%. I can't remember who I was speaking to the other day, but someone said to me that a certain player or these players who maybe would play an event like this didn't come because Nottingham is so unpredictable in terms of the weather and you never know what it might do. And it is really, I mean, it was pretty much a whirlwind in week one. It was really crazy conditions out there.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the first two or three days of the first week was very difficult. It wasn't, at times you really didn't feel like you were playing tennis. It was more just trying to get the ball in the court. The wind was kind of swirling in all different directions. And then we had rain one of the days and you're going inside, and it definitely would, I'm sure, put off like certain players. They might be like, I don't want this unpredictability. They could go somewhere else. Obviously, it's the UK, so the weather at this time of the year, you're never too sure about. And they might be like, I'd rather go abroad where I know that I'm going to be playing this surface all week. And it kind of something that I was ready for. And I just, kind of adapted to it. And it's just trying to like stay calm in those situations because you know that you're not going to be playing your best tennis.
Yeah, sure. That adaptability is really key. It's such a huge part of the sport in all of its aspects. But we should talk a little bit about why these are home courts for you. I don't think I know this. So you went to university in Nottingham. Mm-hmm. Was Nottingham home for you growing up or not?
No. So I'm from Sussex. So I grew up there. My family's all based there. I went to university in America. I was in Utah for 4 years. And then I came to Nottingham to do my master's and graduated at the end of 2020, so kind of through COVID. I then stayed on and have kind of been training here since as a base, because just the facilities, the coaches, the support that I've got here has been amazing, and I wouldn't be able to get that back home. I live near Eastbourne, actually, where the tournament's held. But there's not the same level as here. Obviously, the facility here is amazing, and the coaches have been fantastic. So I've been based out of here, and I now have a place up here in Nottingham.
So how did you, I guess, come across the sport for the first time home in Sussex? Was there background in your family? Was it something that you found outside of the home?
So I think my parents started to play a little bit. My dad used to play like semi-professional football, I think, was his best kind of, like, he was very sporty, and both my parents are sporty, but they hadn't played tennis until later on, I think, when they were both in their kind of 40s, they started to play a little bit, and I went to the local club. I'd play tennis and football kind of growing up, and my parents were great because we were kind of, where we were living was a little bit isolated. My mum in particular was driving me. I'd train out of Brighton, and so she'd be driving me back and forth out of there. And then kind of as I got better at tennis and compared to football, I kind of took it more seriously. And then as a junior, I actually was away from home a lot. I trained a little bit up in Loughborough, a few years in Bath, kind of living away from home before I went to university. So I took it quite seriously as a junior, and I couldn't really stay at home because where I was living was kind of in the middle of kind of nowhere, so there wasn't the training options for me.
Was that a little bit of a shock to your parents in terms of you pursuing sport?
It was a little bit surprising. Yeah, thinking about it definitely was surprising because, yeah, they didn't really have any background in it, but they've always been amazing and kind of wanted me to continue. And at certain times when it looked like I was going to stop playing or I had injuries or something, they were also supportive of that. So they've been great. It certainly wasn't kind of an agenda of theirs that I was going to be a tennis player or I was definitely going to play professionally. Like, I just was playing and it was going quite well, so they would just continue to kind of help me where they could. I think it is quite surprising. I'm one of four siblings and none of the other, I'm the youngest and no one else plays sport at all.
So wow.
quite a different route.
Yeah, that's quite a rarity. I think you see so many, even in tennis, so many younger siblings who have older tennis playing siblings then come through. Okay, so you said you were traveling from quite young. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great as well, by the way, that you said your parents were so supportive, because often when a player is young, there can be, I guess, concerns from the parents, like, is this what they should be doing? Maybe they should focus on school. Maybe they should do this or that. Yeah. So to have had that must have been helpful in terms of, I mean, how did you find it traveling at a young age? It must not always have been easy.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not easy. I think you obviously get a lot more independent and doing that at a younger age. But like I said, I never kind of felt the pressure from my parents. So I kind of knew that it was just up to me what I wanted to decide, which is an amazing position to be in. And I know it can be quite rare. And so I kind of was making the decisions on what I felt was best. And yeah, just was obviously very independent and kind of traveling on my own, and like had great coaches at the places I was at who kind of looked after me and things like that. So made it a bit of a unique kind of upbringing through tennis. But yeah, I wouldn't change it.
When you say coaches at the places we were at, were you ever at an academy or something
similar?
Yeah,
so I was at the academy in Loughborough, but then when I went to Bath, I stayed at a host family when I was in Bath. So my family was back in Sussex, and I actually stayed for 2 years with one of the coaches from Bath who's here, Craig Proctor. He's been amazing. Like, I was kind of wasn't sure I was actually going to drop out of tennis, and I'd kind of stopped for a while, and then he was actually the coach that brought me back in and said, like, I actually stayed with him for 2 years, and like, it was amazing, and he kind of helped me to like kind of find the love for tennis again, and before I went to American University. So like, things like that was something that I could never have like envisaged happening, and like, crazy to think that I'm still playing tennis now. I would have never thought that like a few years ago. And so, yeah, like, people like Craig have been like amazing just to help me keep playing tennis, really.
In those moments where you wanted to stop, because from the way you're speaking, it sounds like there were multiple instances of that. What was it that was making you lose the desire to play and compete?
I think it was just, it's kind of like the main factors, I guess. Like, when you're growing up a little bit, there's like kind of social factors. You obviously have to be pretty dialed in, and you're like kind of not able to be as like, do many social things. I'd say you're always playing tournaments, you're always training, staying away, and like, if you wanted to stay with friends or things like that. And I also had injuries when I was kind of 16-17, so I couldn't play anyway for a few months. So it's kind of like a combination of those two that kind of meant that I was, you know, like, not really enjoying the game at all, and I was thinking that would kind of be the end of it.
Well, okay, so you've mentioned kind of those battles with, should I keep playing, should I not, carried on and ended up going to college in the States. I won't dwell on this too long, but I wonder, you said you became very independent with the traveling. Did that help when it came to take the college tennis route?
Yeah, it definitely did. I know a lot of people do, and I was to say, I really struggled the first year still with just the, it wasn't so much actually for me but the travel in terms of being away from home. It was just the kind of regime of it, the training and the kind of intensity. I struggled with that more. And I got quite badly injured in my first year. I had a stress fracture, so I was actually kind of out for a lot of it. And I was, struggled to adapt to the culture out there. And so that was kind of more actually what I was struggling with in the first year. And then I kind of worked my way through that and eventually kind of came out the other side and actually really enjoyed my time. The last like 2 or 3 years, I loved it. But I certainly, the first year I found very tough.
That's really interesting. We are going to talk a little bit more about this, actually, because I've never heard anyone say that. Like, everyone who's gone over there has loved it, really enjoyed the vibes and the atmosphere. But was that just an extreme contrast to everything you'd been used to growing up?
It was. I found it slightly different. When I went to Utah, I was kind of straight away in the first year, I was playing quite high up in the team, and they had quite high expectations, I think. And I got a stress fracture in my shin, so I was out for 3 or 4 months. And there was the training that led to that was like I was kind of overlooked, and they weren't really listening kind of to what I was saying. And I just felt like a little bit undervalued. And then they had high expectations and expecting me to play when I was still injured. And it was kind of just a bit of a mess. I found it difficult. I wouldn't say that I got, at the time I was struggling a bit with the coaches, and obviously I wasn't performing for them, so they weren't like too pleased with me, so there's a bit of friction there. And so it definitely took time, and we had to kind of like work through it for the first kind of year and a half, and was looking into other options and was trying to maybe move away and things like that. But then kind of clicked a little bit and kind of found my way, and obviously was able to play a lot more and wasn't so injured, which was the first thing, just being able to play a lot more. Like I said, the last 2 or 3 years was great, but it certainly wasn't like straight from the off like feeling amazing and loving it out there.
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective, because people who I've heard talk about going to college before, it's almost been kind of the answer to all of their problems, but you've kind of shown that there are challenges there. Mm-hmm. And it's not always plain sailing, but it's great that you finished on a positive note. And I wonder what your thought process was in terms of, and I always have to ask this, going to college in the first place. Had you thought about going professional beforehand? Was that the aim in the long run?
No, not at all. Never thought I would play professionally. I was training at Bath. A lot of the players who were around my age were all going to America and having a great time. I was just solely based on trying to do that. And kind of like I said a little bit earlier, when I was 16 and to 18, I really wasn't playing that much. I was kind of injured. I wasn't that interested in tennis. So I was just trying to get out to America and do it that way. I never had a thought of playing professionally when I was 18. I didn't really, even through college, I wasn't playing. I wasn't coming back in the summers and playing futures. I only did it after my 4 years. So that wasn't even a thought process all the way up until I kind of started, like finished in Utah and came to Nottingham, and I was playing good tennis, and I was kind of like, oh, actually, maybe I should try and do this full time. When I was 16 to 18, I just wanted to go to America. That was kind of my plan, and I didn't really have any other options.
So you didn't have any long-term aspirations in terms of a career at that point? You were just kind of going year to year?
No, yeah, exactly.
Wow. That's it kind of destroys the theory that you have to be born with a racket in your hand in order to play tennis. Sure. I love to hear stories like this that they're a little more of a rarity because of the rigors of the sport and how much mm-hmm. it takes to get to the top. But you're an example as someone that's coming through now that it can work. So in terms of the Masters you did at Nottingham, mm-hmm. what was that in? And had your focus then switched more to turning pro afterwards, more than it had been in America, or not at that point?
Yeah, so I did my Masters in operations management and supply chain, and I didn't want to go full-time after Utah. I still kind of thought I wanted to come back and do a year. There was opportunities with scholarships and things through my tennis that I wanted to maximize, and I thought whilst I was training here, it's a very different setup. You have a lot, it's a lot more up to yourself, like individual, what you want to do, so you can train more, you can play more tournaments than you could when you're in America. And so I wanted to like use that to start to play some futures, as well as playing the university matches and just seeing where my level was and what I could do. Kind of as I got towards the end of that, I was like, okay, I want to try and travel and see what happens. Obviously COVID then hit, so it kind of delays things, and my ranking was, I think I might, when COVID happened, I think I might have had 1 or 2 points. So I wasn't able to really do very much for a little while. It was kind of as I was progressing out of that, and I knew what I could get also out of Nottingham, and that they could help me out as a pro player. That's when I was kind of like, okay, like I can give this a go and I can do it here, because I never really knew how I was going to do it, where I was going to train, how it was going to work, what I was going to like, how I was going to travel and stuff. So yeah, that's kind of how it all came into place.
That's brilliant how it did fall into place like that, and almost the path was laid out for you, I guess, mm-hmm. at that point. So not having had those ambitions of, oh, one day I'm going to be world number one, I'm going to win Grand Slams. Do you think that helped you deal with things mentally when the time came to get out on the road and start climbing the ladder?
It could have been, yeah. I mean, I found like the first couple trips when I went abroad and I was playing full time, I definitely struggled with that, having done 5 years of university tennis. And towards the end, I played a couple futures, but I knew that I was kind of still at uni. Like when you're doing it full time and you're playing these events and you're like, this is my career. Like I did definitely struggle with that. The added kind of pressure on top, I was like, okay, wow, like this is, you know, like if I keep losing first round of qualies, like I'm just waiting around for another week and you're losing money and kind of all the stresses that come with it. And so I certainly struggled with that. Like, and the transition wasn't an easy one to going like full time. And it's taken a while to kind of get the right mindset towards it, I'd say.
So if we were to take, because we know, or those that are familiar with the ITF circuit know that it's not all strawberries and cream, as we would say, comparing it to Wimbledon. Yeah. There's so many struggles. What was the heaviest weight for you in those early days, do you think?
I would say the financial certainly played a big factor, because when I was first traveling abroad, there was, I think it was when I was doing it full time, it was 2021, and there was no futures in the UK. And so I think like kind of the pro league had started, but I wasn't high enough to get in. And so I was traveling abroad. And so I had to travel abroad for every tournament that I played. And that was costing a lot. And I was in qualies of all of them. And obviously if you lose in qualies, you don't get any money. And so I kind of knew that like my like budget that I had was kind of running out. And knowing that, you know, and then I'd kind of heard as the year went on that they would have a lot more in the UK the following year, which was made it a lot easier. But I would say that financially was something that was kind of probably weighing on me a lot, and probably the biggest factor when I started out.
Okay. Do you consider 2021 or 2022 your first kind of full season on futures? Because I noticed 21, you started out in March, but last year you played the year round.
Yeah, I'd say 2022 I played a full year. I started kind of March 2021, and so I kind of feel like I would kind of say I'm in my third year, I guess. So I've done a year and a half into my two and a bit, and I don't know, I just it feels weird looking back on it now, kind of thinking about it. It does feel so long ago that I was I remember I went to Egypt in March 2021, I think, and like that first trip was, it definitely kind of brings back like those weird emotions and things. But I feel like now that I kind of know a lot. I know I haven't obviously been to all of the different venues and the tournaments, but I know a lot now about futures tennis, and I've played full year last year, quite a lot of tournaments in 2021. I feel like I'm kind of used to what it can kind of throw at me now.
Yeah, growing with it. There's something that's very interesting to me from an outside perspective. It's how close everyone seems to be in terms of the level here. I mean, let's take for an example, Jules Marie won first week of Nottingham here and then lost first round in the second week. You, in this week three, are on track to, you're facing Charlie Broome in your opening match. You faced him, and we're going to talk about this. I will get to it, I promise. You won your first 25K level event in Sheffield, and you played Charlie in the final. I wonder how easy or difficult it is to keep that perspective of how close it all is in the moment, because I did notice at the beginning of last season, solid start to the year, quarters of a 25, and then you maybe have a loss or two in qualifying for an M15 event. So how easy or difficult is it to keep perspective in the moment?
It's very tough. I certainly have kind of gone through patches where you can't, whatever I'm doing, I can't get a win, like just weeks upon weeks, and you're trying different things, and it's just obviously at the like at this stage now, it is results driven, and you're trying to make it as process based as you can to try and do things within your control. But it is like you can lose a really close match first round, and then they go and win the tournament, and then you're suddenly like, oh, well, it was great that I was so close to the person that won the event, but that doesn't give me any, like, you can get lost in it. Oh, that doesn't give me ranking points or this and that, and you can get lost in that world a little bit, and it definitely might have an impact on the next week or the next week. And if you're not feeling confident and you're kind of losing first round each week, then it can kind of like be a snowball effect. And so it's just, it's really trying to, like, that's when it helps a lot, like the people that around you. Like, that's what I've kind of found, is speaking to like coaches or family and just trying to kind of separate yourself from that and just trying to get away from it, because you can easily get lost in it, and it can really impact like how you're playing on court, and because it is all so close, it's just a few points in it, and that could be the difference.
It's interesting that you mentioned there speaking to coaches and your family, which I assumed as a player they're the first people you go to. But I've been very curious kind of being around these events, particularly in the UK. A lot of the same players play these events, so you're around a lot of the same guys. The Brits, I know each other very well at this point. But there always seems to be this assumption that not everything is put on the table, and you can't say everything, because these people, some might be your friends, but they're also your competitors. So I just wonder how much you actually talk about these kind of struggles and how you're feeling on the court with each other. Are there things that are left unsaid, or do you feel like you can actually chat with people?
I would say that, like, yeah, obviously you have some players that you know a lot better, and you kind of talk through things, and I would say, yeah, there'd be some that I would talk to pretty openly about things that I understand that I could play them the week after, and that's part of tennis. Like, that's just the way it is. Like, you can be good friends, you play a match, you're still good friends, like, you can still talk about these things. I don't think it would have, in my head, I've never thought like, oh, that will give them such a big competitive advantage if I play them the following week. So it hasn't really bothered me. I haven't really thought kind of that way. So yeah, I wouldn't say that it's kind of stopped me. I've kind of been talking to someone and kind of thought mid-sentence, oh no, I don't want to like release that information to them. It's kind of never really bothered me that way.
That's good that you can feel comfortable like that, because I guess how you're feeling around the court has an effect on how you're feeling on the court as well. So important to be comfortable in every aspect. Let's talk about Sheffield then, which was was that in January or February?
I think it was towards the end of January.
End of January. So that was the first swing of indoor hardcourt events in the UK at ITF level this year, which I didn't cover on the podcast because I was elsewhere. I was down under at the time, but I did track this. You went qualifying to title in Sheffield at 25k level, so that's the second step up. That's a big achievement with the strength of some of these draws, and that was not a straightforward draw. You beat Jules Marie in quarters, you beat Clément Chadec in semis. They've both won titles at that level this year, and then Charlie in the final, who's making moves and moving on to the Challenger Tour. I mean, take me back to the beginning of that week. What were your expectations, and how were you feeling about your tennis in general at that point?
Yeah, it was it kind of was a crazy week. I played the week before, and I qualified and lost to Charlie Broome first round in three sets, and I thought I played quite well, he played a really good third set, was too strong, and I kind of felt pretty good within my game. I'd played quite a lot of matches, I'd also played like a pro league, so I'd felt ready to go for Sheffield. And then it was just one where kind of like the matches, I was just getting into a rhythm of it, really. Like, sometimes I find, like, especially last year when I was struggling a lot and I was losing a lot of first rounds, like I just needed more matches, and I know that I do a lot better once I have more matches, and so to get through qualifying I was feeling quite good, and especially I won a pretty close match first round in three sets, and then it just kind of, I felt really free actually, and quite relaxed, and managed to somehow like just play my best tennis kind of when it mattered, and was just kind of taking it to my opponents and players who now are kind of probably looking more at challenges and stuff. I was able to kind of beat them, which was pretty amazing, and for me, I hadn't gone beyond a quarter final of a 25k, so that was kind of my aim, was trying to at least make semis, try and make a final, and then obviously that week it kind of just all came together, which was amazing, and I kind of remember that week for a while.
Okay, everyone does chat at these events. Everyone's talking about everyone else. I don't, whatever you're talking about, those discussions are going on, and but people take notice of these kind of things. Did you feel that you were observed differently after you got that title? And did your expectations for yourself change?
I don't know if I would have said that I would have been viewed. I kind of thought that maybe I kind of knew that I could maybe beat some of these players, but I just hadn't done it consistently. And so to obviously do it like three or four in a row and like go all the way through was just something that I hadn't done yet, but I'd kind of felt like I had the game to beat these kind of players, and I don't know really. I wouldn't say whether it kind of changed my expectations, I was just pleased to be like able to do it and just achieve it. I guess maybe at the next event I was suddenly like, okay, like I know that maybe players who I'm playing might think, okay, he's on good form, something like that, and like it might, maybe they might have thought it would be an easier match for them than it is now. I don't know, but I don't think it's changed too much on expectations. It's just the thing that is kind of tough is obviously when I have a week like that and I'm playing so well, when you suddenly aren't playing so well, you're suddenly like, oh, well, what did I do? Like, what did I do that week that was so good? Like, I want to try and find that again. And obviously it's tough to find. Like, it's not, you can't always play that way. That's not how it works. So I'd say sometimes I found that a little bit tough, is trying to get back to that. And obviously when you're not playing that well for a period of time, you find that difficult.
But you've picked up well since then. I mean, I remember it would have been in Bath in February, you beat the top seeds. Mm-hmm. I think it was the top seed, Philip Gianu, at that event, the 25K. And then bringing it together in different conditions here in Nottingham outdoors. I know you say you've got the home advantage, but you're definitely proving that you're adaptable.
Yeah.
I've got to say, there are moments, and I've watched you over the last couple of years at the pro leagues a bit, but also at this level, and there have been times when I've watched you play and I've literally thought, how does this guy ever lose? Because ironically, given your surname, you have a very big game. Yeah. One of those matches where I was thinking that for a few moments was actually against Aidan McHugh in Shrewsbury last year, and you actually lost that match. So it's a very fascinating thing. I wonder for you, because if we look at your results, you have been making fairly steady progress. For you, what's the difference between some of those matches that you were losing then that you're winning now? What have been the biggest changes?
I would say, yeah, it's difficult. Maybe it's a lot of it might be kind of calmness in the bigger situations when you've obviously done it before, or you've beaten certain players and you kind of know that it's possible. Then like that obviously helps, just the inner confidence in my own game. I would say, like, just being able to go after it, and yeah, like I kind of play aggressive style, so I try and have it as much in my control as I can. So I kind of know that if I'm playing really well, it's going to be tough, like, to get it like away from my racket, really. And I just, yeah, it's honestly just the smallest of margins, and it's never as simple as saying, oh, I just need to do this well, and that means I'm going to win. But it's just, I think just those that little bit of confidence on certain points or big moments or things like that is what's kind of helped me a lot in this year to get maybe some better results than I have done in the past.
I'm aware I've kept you longer than I said I would, so I'll wrap it to a close very soon. But I just want to pick up on something that you said regarding your time at uni in the States. Mm-hmm. And you said that sometimes you felt kind of overlooked and undervalued. Me, from my perspective on the outside, it seems like it's quite a difficult time to actually make a name for yourself in British tennis on the men's side, because there's so much strength and depth. You've got several players in the top 100. You've got players then below that coming through. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that you are under the radar? And is that somewhere that you want to be for your own kind of ability to produce?
I mean, yeah, I would say, like, I'm obviously just kind of, I haven't really thought into that. For me, I'm just trying to focus on what I can kind of get and improving my results. And the last few weeks have been great, but I know there's such a long way to go for me to try and like really make a career out of it. And so I'm trying to just focus on each week and being like, okay, let's try and reach this goal. And my coach and stuff and everyone in Nottingham, we're very much trying to not focus on rankings and what these people are saying. And we're just trying to do our own thing here and really just trying to take it one week at a time and see where I can get to and just really try and reach like kind of my full potential in the game, and just wherever that is wherever that is, and if people are talking about it or not, I really don't mind.
That's great. So it sounds like you haven't put a ceiling on it, but I know that most players tend to have a goal at least for the current season. So is that something that you've laid down, so somewhere that you want to get to by the end of the year, or something you want to have done by the end of 2023?
I was saying earlier, to be honest, I wanted to try and make the final of the futures. I'd lost in the semis of a 15K at the end of last year, and I served for the match, and that was tough, and I hadn't made a final before, so I wanted to try and do that. So if I can make another final, that'd be great. Whether it's this week or in December, then that'd be great. Other than that, I haven't really set many. I'm just trying to like stay healthy, try and play tournaments, and just make sure that like I'm fully prepared for each event, and then just see what happens, really.
Well, it's been great seeing you maintain a consistent level on court and looking to maximize your capabilities and see how far you can go. And it's been genuinely really interesting to listen to your story because I didn't have much idea of it before. And yeah, I always love to hear about people that have come to the sport a little later and maybe not taken the typical tennis route, but prove that there is a door there for people that might not think that they fit the mold, as it were. So Dan, really appreciate it. Thank you for taking the
time. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Many thanks once again to Dan for that conversation. These podcasts are not often recorded when there's a tournament in progress that the player in question is involved in. So I really do appreciate him taking the time for that one, and I'm sure you do too. Dan will be back on the courts of Nottingham Tennis Centre this week. This is your last chance to take advantage of free entry to watch these players up close, and this week's draws might be the strongest yet. Harriet Dart, who reached the quarterfinals of the WTA level event in Nottingham last season and was recently ranked inside the world's top 100, is the top seed in the women's draw, and there is strength and depth in the men's draw again as well. If you can't make it in person, you can find live streams through the ITF website and the LTA's YouTube channel. And if you can't find those, you can follow the podcast on Instagram at tennis_in_the_UK and myself at Abigail Tennis, same on Twitter, and the podcast on Twitter at tennis_in_the_UK. If I don't see you there beforehand, I will see you back here next week. Thank you for listening.